Good morning. I call the Senate Finance Committee to order. Today is Monday, April 19th, 2021. The time is 9:05. Please silence all cell phones. Thank all the support staff. Thank you all for being here today. Senator Wilkowski, good morning. And Co-Chair Stedman, Senator Olson, Senator Hoffman, Senator Wilson, and online in Anchorage is Senator Von Imhoff. Can you hear us? Thumbs up, we're good to go. And thanks to Carson and Laura for helping us out here this morning. On today's agenda, we have SB 71, Council on Arts, Plates, and Manage Art. SB 20, Out-of-State Teacher Reciprocity. SB 55, Employer Contributions to PERS. Up first is SB 71. This is the second hearing of SB 71. And we heard public testimony on April 6th. My intention is to consider amendments today. And Mr. Lampkin, if you would bring yourself to the table and just give us a brief bill reintroduction. And then Senator Stevens is still in Education Committee. We have Mr. Brown, Ben Brown, Chair of Alaska State Council of the Arts, is on Teams. Andrea Noble, Executive Director of Alaska Council on the Arts. And Kelly O'Sullivan from Ledge Finance is available. So if you will give us a brief reintroduction of the bill, and then we will consider amendments.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Tim Lampkin, staff to Senator Stevens. Before you is Senate Bill 71, the Arts Council. It relates to the license plate component. It allows DMV to collect a fee for the artistic plate that they design and offer, and that those monies be applied toward their budget. That's an overall summary of the bill. There's some other what we would call housekeeping provisions as a result of the 2019 budget cycle that these amendments are going to speak to here momentarily.
Thank you. With that, any questions of Mr. Lampkin before we move to amendments? Senator Wilson, do you have an amendment number one?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move amendment number one.
I'll object for the purposes of discussion.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Amendment one on page 3, lines 15 through 19, would delete this material. Our office feels that, you know, the governor's veto authority, he has this in other similar items, similar to the Arts Council, and I truly feel that we should not pick sort of the winners and losers of this, and I believe that there's a following amendment that would help better try to find a common solution to fix this, which I would think would be a little bit more appropriate.
Thank you. Any questions from committee members on amendment number one? Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like the amendment sponsor to give us more detail. I didn't quite follow the conversation. It needs to be more explicit in dealing with the Executive Budget Act and what's going on here with this nonprofit inclusion.
Mr. Lampkin.
Through the Chair, Senator Stedman. So the history behind a section that this is dealing with, I believe it's Section 5, if I'm not mistaken. The drafter at the time, the goal here is to hold harmless those funds that the Arts Council generates through private donors. During that budget cycle, those funds were vetoed, and so the drafter came forward with this particular Section 5, and after we looked at it closer, we appreciated Senator Wilson's observation that technically we can't exempt the Arts Council agency, notwithstanding its status as a quasi-public corporation. It's not entirely constitutional for us to exempt them from the Executive Budget Act. So therefore, we would accept this amendment, and in lieu of it, would request that we consider amendment number two forthcoming.
Thank you, Mr. Lampkin. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, Mr. Lampkin, the sponsor is not in favor of amendment number one and would rather have amendment number two?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, no, we do accept number one as appropriate, and would also like in lieu of, or excuse me, to use amendment number one, of course, to accept it, and then also accept number two.
No further questions, Mr. Chairman.
Further discussion? I'll remove my objection. Is there any further objection? Amendment number one passes. Brief at ease. Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to go ahead and move amendment number two.
Thank you, and I'll object for purposes of discussion. Mr. Lampkin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So before you, in consultation with legal and with finance and the Arts Council, Mr. Brown, this approach was determined to be the correct approach to what's the goal here, and that is to include it and specify their receipts under 3705-146C, such that they would not, of course, not be immune from veto, but if the governor executive were to come in and veto not only their UGF funds component of their budget, he would also specifically have to go in and also veto this receipt authority. That's a strategy that's used by quite a long list of other receipts, like other funds, that seems to be the correct approach here.
Okay. Any other questions of the sponsor of the bill? Thank you. I'll remove my objections. Any further objection? Amendment number two passes. Okay. We will set this bill aside and draft a committee substitute and updated fiscal notes. Thank you. Okay. Next up is SB 20, Teacher Reciprocity. Mr. Lampkin, you might as well stay right there because Senator Stevens' day again this morning. This is the second hearing of SB 20. We've heard invited testimony and public testimony on March 29th. My intention is to consider amendments today. And Mr. Lampkin, if you could do a brief bill reintroduction for us.
Your Chair. Once again, Tim Lampkin, staff to Senator Stevens. Before you is a bill that aligns fairly well with regulatory suspensions that occurred by emergency order this past year. It is intended, and with success, to as demonstrated this past year, to assist districts in improving the supply of qualified teachers. We've heard consistently from superintendents that this was beneficial to them, and we'd like to give them another means and tools to help address our teacher shortage here. That's a summary of the bill before you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Okay. Available online, I forgot to mention, for questions, we have Tamara Van Wy, Division of Director of Department of Education Early Development, Dr. Dina Bishop, Superintendent Anchorage School District, and Noah Klein, Legal. We have several amendments here this morning. And Senator Wilson.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move amendment number one.
And I'll object for discussion.
Yes, Mr. Chair, amendment one goes into page two on section three. Where we started to talk about the out-of-state teachers requirement for continuing education requirements. And part of this is within Section K is to the training requirements for the Alaska, for The section requirements for the person has completed the alcohol, drug, disabilities, and the training regarding to sexual abuse and sexual assault awareness prevention under this act and training. Those courses aren't like the additional courses where you have to take 3 semester hours of college course credits. Instead, it's more of an online training which someone can complete within about eight hours or so is what our office researched and found out and felt that that can be completed within 90 days after someone's hired instead of waiting for those courses to be offered through some type of continuing education course through one of the universities or other types of courses.
And this will take it from 2 years to 90 days to be completed, is that correct?
Yes.
Thank you. Mr. Lampkin, is you considered this amendment and you guys find it workable, amenable?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Speaking on behalf of Senator Stevens, this is an agreeable amendment.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Senator Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To the maker of the amendment, have you contacted any of the school districts, particular rural school districts, to see if they're in favor or not in favor of this?
I have not, through the chair. Senator Olson, we have not spoke to other school districts. We did talk to the Department of Education to verify the length and times of requirements, and they thought that would be a reasonable requirement.
Mr. Chairman.
Follow-up, Senator Olson?
I'm not so concerned about the Department of Education because they're keeping up with everything. I was wondering if you said Dina Bishop was on board, the superintendent of Anchorage Schools?
She is not online. I mentioned that she was, but she isn't. I didn't misspoke. I just didn't double-check the screen. She's not available.
If I could continue, Mr. Chairman. One thing that has happened is that many of the rural school districts are talking about things that they've got to comply with, which essentially are unfunded mandates. I'm not saying that this is, but it certainly would help if I could get the opinion of some of the rural school districts as to whether they're in favor of this amendment.
Okay. Division Director, Department of Education, Tamara Van Wy, are you online?
Good morning. Yes, I am online. This is Tamara Van Wy.
Thank you. The question I have for you, all of these courses that's required under this section could all be completed online. Is that correct?
For the record, this is Tamara Van Wy, Division Director, Innovation and Education Excellence at the Department of Education and Early Development. Senator Bishop, if you are talking about the education and training requirement, could you clarify for me, please? Are you talking about Section 3?
Affirmative, yes, Section 3.
Okay, yes. We do have a number of trainings that are available online, and the shorter ones that are part of our mandatory training series, they can be completed online in a relatively short amount of time. That does not include the two courses, the Multicultural Studies course and the Alaska Studies course, that are also required for certification. Those are much longer courses.
But the required training, other than the two you just spoke about, are online trainings?
Yes, sir, that is correct.
Okay, thank you. Senator Olson.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Van Wyen, have you heard from any of the rural school districts as to whether they're in favor of this, or any school district for that matter, whether they're in favor of this amendment?
Through the chair, no, I have not heard from any other districts about their feelings on this particular amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Lampkin, would you like to elaborate?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, we have been in conversation with school districts, and they are very supportive. Given the sensitivity of the subject matter, they're certainly supportive and help point out that 2 years amount of time is far too long to require that training, and that 90 days is very reasonable.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That answers my questions.
Thank you, Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Ms. Van Wy.
This is Senator Von Imhoff.
Oh, I'm sorry. Please, yes, fire away.
Okay. So I just want to be clear with Senator Wilson's amendment. This is addressing alcohol and drug-related disabilities and sexual abuse, sexual assault awareness and prevention training. My understanding now is that Alaskan teachers cannot get a certificate until they've done this training. So to somewhat address Senator Olson's question earlier, I don't think any Alaskan teacher, regardless of whether they're urban or rural, can get a certificate until this about roughly 8 hours of training is done. Can someone from the DEED confirm that, please?
Ms. Van Wy? Ms. Van Wy, Department of Education.
Yes, thank you, Chair Bishop. Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, I apologize. Sandra Meredith, our teacher certification administrator, typically is on to answer questions about SB 20, and she is not available today. I believe you are correct. As I'm reviewing the language, yes, I believe that those are requirements that are fairly new for teacher certification prior even to initial certification. And I am checking on that right now and should be able to get back to the committee momentarily with confirmation. My apologies.
Mr. Lampkin?
Mr. Chairman, through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, as referenced, Ms. Cooper has testified in prior hearings that that is indeed the case and that this would allow the flexibility to give them 90 days to do that training. It's also worth noting that that incoming teachers, incoming from out of state, their application and paperwork is very well vetted by the department before they issue certificates, and that it's assumed and generally known that they complete this type of training in their home state before they come here. So they're not entirely foreign to this type of training.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, follow-up?
Follow-up.
Thank you. So just to confirm then, out-of-state teachers under this amendment will be given a 90-day window by which to complete this training, so they will be technically then in the classrooms for 90 days while they find the time to complete the 8 hours of classes. This seems reasonable. I think 90 days is probably the max we'd want this to happen. And I just want to confirm, second question, this does not include the Alaska studies and multicultural education, which Alaskan teachers are required to get. And right now, I believe Alaskan teachers can receive a provisional certificate with a 2-year grace period to complete this education. That would be Alaska studies, again, and multicultural education. Are out-of-state teachers being given the same 2-year grace period for those particular classes?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, that is correct.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, one last follow-up, please.
Yes.
Okay, so to confirm, the only thing that this amendment is dealing with is the alcohol and drug-related disabilities and sexual abuse, sexual assault awareness and prevention.
Through Chair, Senator Weinhoff, that is correct, except I should also add that it includes suicide prevention training as well.
Thank you.
Further questions from the table on amendment number one? I remove my objection. Is there further objection? Seeing none, we've adopted amendment number one. Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Amendment number two is fundamentally the same as amendment number one, so I'll withdraw that.
Thank you. We have withdrawn amendment number two. Okay. Amendment number three.
Move amendment number three.
I'll object.
Thank you, Mr.
Senator
Chairman.
Senator Wilkowski.
Yeah, this amendment is trying to avoid what we think is perhaps an unintended potential consequence of this bill, I support the concept of it. What the bill fundamentally does is it allows teachers who are not certified in Alaska to more readily become certified in Alaska by waiving in, essentially. The concern that that I had, my, and in discussing this in my office, that we had was this potentially makes it easy, very easy, for the setting up of virtual schools outside of Alaska. Having teachers who can be outside, who are not in Alaska, and quite frankly, outsource teacher jobs to outside of Alaska. We think that students are better served by having teachers here in Alaska. We think the studies show that. I've heard that in reports from the superintendent in my district. And that's the scenario we're trying to avoid. And so what this amendment would do is simply say that teachers have to be domiciled in the state of Alaska. And that means they have to have a dwelling here. They have to have an apartment, a house, something here in the state of Alaska. What we've seen with other areas that we've opened up to this sort of thing, Teledocs, for example, we have a huge number of doctors now who don't live in Alaska. And we're trying to avoid that same scenario with this, where teachers simply don't live in Alaska and kids are being trained on the computer. I think certainly in a pandemic, that's okay, and this wouldn't stop that. But I think we're trying to prevent that slippery slope of setting up out of school, virtual outside schools, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Comments to amendment number three? Good morning, Senator Stevens. Welcome to the committee. And Senator Hoffman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would initially agree with Senator Wilikowski. The problem that we have in rural Alaska is that we have vacancies that aren't being filled. And as a result of that, students are not getting educated. And from my viewpoint, if they get a virtual classroom, that's better than having no teacher at all. So I wonder if you might comment on how do we rectify that situation in rural Alaska, where we have teachers coming off the plane for the first time, taking one look at the situation, or the next day looking at their living conditions, turn around and get back on the plane and head back to Anchorage or the lower 48. Because from my viewpoint, as I said, virtual education is better than none at all.
Thank you. And we certainly considered that issue. And again, this doesn't completely prevent virtual schools. In that scenario, as long as there were teachers in Alaska, they could do the virtual schools. So they could be, if there were problems with teachers residing in certain parts of rural Alaska, as long as they resided somewhere in Alaska. We're trying to keep Alaska jobs. We're trying to keep the revenue in Alaska. We're trying to prevent the wholesale setting up of schools in other states, other countries, and avoiding that revenue that would come into Alaska. People that don't understand Alaska at all. So that's that situation could be avoided by simply having them in other parts of Alaska.
Mr. Lampkin or Senator Stevens, any comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Gary Stevens, Kodiak. Difficult to really address that this amendment, because truly it guts the whole bill. And there's no point for the bill if you do this. We know that we want to have Alaskan teachers. We want to have our kids become teachers. We want to have Alaskans in all the teaching jobs, but that's simply unrealistic. Every district is struggling to find the teachers that they need, and they have to go outside to find those teachers. It's not a matter of losing Alaskan jobs. I would guess 75% of our teachers in Alaska are non-Alaskan. Every district faces those enormous problems. So we need teachers. We always will need teachers. Insisting they be domiciled in Alaska, as I said, just really eviscerates the bill. That's all I can say.
And thank you.
Maybe Mr. Lampkin would have some comments.
Senator Wilson, You had a question?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Similar to Senator Hoffman's question, I just have a concern. I understand the intent. I don't disagree with that intent at all. We do want teachers here in Alaska, but I'm just concerned upon some of our public charter schools, which are in our Matsu School District and our correspondence schools, and how this may affect those type of institutions that we currently have that may have teachers that may be out of state doing virtual dwelling just because of the way that they're set up.
Hey, thank you. Ms. Van Wy, are you still online? I have a question.
Senator Bishop, yes, I'm still here.
I don't know if you can answer this, and that's fine if you can. I was just curious if you had a feel for how much education might be going on around the state from different districts where there might be some course class that a student might be taking from somewhere outside of Alaska online.
Thank you for the question. Again, for the record, this is Tamara Van Wy, Division Director, Department of Education and Early Development. Senator Bishop, I can't give you specific numbers. We do know that, especially in rural districts, rural and remote districts, that we do have students who are taking courses that may be taught fully online by teachers from outside of the state of Alaska. For most of those outside vendors or the companies that provide those courses, they typically do require the teachers, even if they reside outside of the state of Alaska, to still have Alaska certification. I can't give you any specific numbers. I think it's, those scenarios are most predominant in our rural and remote districts where an individual student might want or need a very isolated or specialized course that is not available within their school district or, you know, sometimes even within the state. Limiting the availability for teacher certification or for the hiring of teachers in Alaska, requiring them to live in the state of Alaska, in our current climate with a very severe teacher shortage, would certainly place a burden on some of those rural and remote districts.
Thank you. So you did say, I heard you say in part of your answer to me was the instruction that's being provided in the lower 48, those teachers have to meet Alaska teacher standards. Is that correct?
Chair Bishop, yes. That is the requirement. There are very isolated circumstances where a course might be requested by an Alaska school district for an individual student, and the company, so to speak, or the vendor that's providing the course might not have a teacher with Alaska certification. So they then request, they let the school district know, and the school district needs to make the decision as to whether or not to continue to provide access to that course for the individual student.
Thank you. Any other questions from committee members? Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. It's been a good discussion. I'm going to withdraw the amendment at this point, and we'll probably work on addressing that rural remote area and perhaps carve out an exclusion for that and possibly reintroduce it on the floor. Thank you.
Senator Wilikowski.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
So thank you. So just one of the questions for the, and this is Senator Von Imhoff, for the maker of the amendment, this is what came to mind, is that while I understand the thoughts behind this amendment, and it definitely has merit, are we talking about, aside from the rural teachers, are we looking at full-time teachers or part-time? And what comes to mind is, what if we have a specialty class, like advanced physics with calculus, and I know this because I know that Diamond High School offers it, and the teacher does, in fact, live in the district, but do we have enough for Mrs. Sears for all of Alaska, all of the high schools? I don't know. What if there's a teacher from MIT that specializes in this? This is a very limited class. What if there's a computer coding? Computer coding is like the next wave of jobs. What if the teacher happens to live in Silicon Valley but teaches a couple classes a week at the engineering schools? What if we have someone who works at the Dana-Farber Institute and is looking at genetics and gene studies? those are pretty important classes. What if they only teach like two classes a week and it's by video? Yes, they would have a potentially an Alaska, if they were serious about this and wanted to do this for several years, they'd look to get an Alaska teaching certificate. But the classes that I think our next generation of students need are going to be a little bit more specialized and a little less potentially mainstream, especially for the high school kids.
Thank you for your comments. We have drawn amendment number 3. We're going to set this bill aside, and a CS will be forthcoming. Our next bill up is Senate Bill 55, Employer Contributions to PERS and TERS. Senator Stevens, thank you and your staff for coming today.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senate Bill 55, everyone has their packet ready to go. This is the third hearing on Senate Bill 55. We've heard public testimony on March 11th. Today, our intention is to cover the fiscal notes and look to the will of the committee. So we'll have Ms. Caroline Schultz come forward, and she's going to give us a brief reintroduction and review of the fiscal notes. She will cover the fiscal notes.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Caroline Schultz from the Office of Management and Budget. Thank you for considering Senate Bill 55 today. The bill, as we've discussed, changes the way that the state makes its contribution to the PERS system. It allows the state to make the contribution from payroll, which spreads the funding across multiple fund sources, rather than having it be entirely funded by unrestricted general funds as part of the state on behalf payment, or the state assistance payment, as it's commonly called. I'll walk through the fiscal notes today. There are three fiscal notes. They're somewhat technical and complicated given the nature of the bill, but I think hopefully we've had enough discussion of the bill that the concepts make sense. I'll start with the first fiscal note for the various department, appropriation various, OMB component number 0. The control code at the bottom of the fiscal note is BJKQJ. This fiscal note represents the increase to all state department payroll. You can see that the total cost in fiscal year 22 is $103.4 million. If you look at the fund source line, you can see that that $103.4 million increase is spread across multiple fund sources, the largest of which is unrestricted general funds at $70 million, but you can see also that there is $11.6 million in federal receipts, $17.7 million in other funds, and $3.9 million in designated general funds. So this is the fiscal note that represents the increase in cost. Turning to the fiscal note for state retirement payments per state assistance, OMB component number 2866, control code LFPHX. This fiscal note shows the decrease in the state assistance payment by $95.8 million unrestricted general funds. So these two fiscal notes combined are how we get the overall fiscal impact of about $25.7 million in UGF savings. I'll turn to the third fiscal note for the Department of Administration Centralized Administrative Services, OMB Component 64, controlled code KQFNW. This fiscal note represents the actuarial cost to the PERS system fund caused by making the state on behalf payment every month through payroll rather than having that portion of the payment occur at the beginning of the fiscal year. Because that funding will not be earning money in the PERS system throughout the year, there is a small cost to the PERS system in foregone earnings. You can see that those begin in fiscal year 2023, estimated to be $200,000 in the first year, increasing up to $1.3 million in the out years. These costs will ultimately be borne by spreading out that state assistance payment through payroll, but we did want to highlight this element in its own fiscal note, in this kind of a placeholder fiscal note. You can see in the attached pages there is the actuarial letter from Buck, the state's actuarial consultant, and describes that this cost and that kind of the opportunity cost of making the payment later rather than earlier in the fiscal year. Mr. Chairman, I'll be happy to take any questions about the fiscal notes.
Okay. Questions? Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the first fiscal note, various departments, the $103 million, which under personnel services, which the vast majority of that is general funds of $70 million. Down under the position count, you don't have any delineation of how many positions we're talking about over these various departments. Why don't you, if we're talking about personal services of $103 million, are there any positions involved? From this fiscal note, it looks like there are none.
Through the chair to Senator Hoffman, thank you for that question. This bill will not add any positions, and customarily that line in the positions count on the fiscal note is for the addition or subtraction of positions. This legislation will impact every PERS employee in state government, which is the vast majority of them. There are a small number of TERS employees in the Department of Education. So this will impact the payroll line for almost every single existing state employee.
The question that I have, Mr. Chairman, is do we have any idea, even though it may be neutral, what is the total position count, do we know, that are being affected?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, there are about 14,000 state employees, roughly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Other questions from committee members? Ms. Schultz, just like on the last fiscal note on the you covered it, and I'm just going through page 202 down there, that second to last paragraph. The Buck did these runs. I know it's very small potatoes in the big scheme of things, but they only went out through 27, and it is what sets $1,300. Starts out at $2,000. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. This begins the first year in fiscal year 2023. It's estimated to be $200,000 and increasing up to $1.3 million in the out years. And that cost will slowly grow over time, given the lost earning value of the funds that are not deposited at the beginning of the year. We see that is a, you know, kind of a small cost that will be significantly overwhelmed by the savings obtained from the bill.
Okay, thank you. Other questions from senators? Any other questions from committee members? Seeing none, Senator Wilson, I'd entertain a motion.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I move Senate Bill 5532-GS1684/A from committee with attached physical note, and it notes and individual committee recommendations.
Thank you. Is there any objection? Seeing no objection, Senate Bill 55 passes from committee. Tomorrow, Tuesday, April 20th at 9 a.m. on the agenda is SB 10, free reduced tuition for essential workers, SB 101, Advisory Commission on Federal Management Areas, and Senate Bill 25, State Government Finances Website. With that, we are adjourned at 9:45 if there's no other business to come before the committee.